We got with us on the line Jim Jablonski, who is with the Black River Audubon Society. So he's obviously familiar with birds. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
So don't you think so? Don't you think birds are a good kind of indicator of weather? You can kind of watch the birds and kind of see what's going to happen in nature, I think.
Oh, I think sometimes you can. You know, certain swifts and so forth, the swallows fly lower, it's said, during, you know, when a storm's coming, that type of thing. But also, as far as the change of seasons, yes, I think it's already starting. I've heard that some birds are already appearing on the Gulf Coast,
coming up from
South America.
Well, the change of the seasons, too, allow us to see different birds over different times. Some birds are more, you know, obviously here during the summertime, but the winter, those hardier birds that like to hang out in northeast Ohio and eat out of my suet feeder, you know, you get to see all sorts of ones.
Yeah, they change. You know, you start seeing, you know, in the late fall, you start seeing dark-eyed juncos and tree sparrows replacing others that are heading south. So, yeah, it's you can definitely tell the seasons changing by them, that's for certain.
Your organization has a special program coming up on February 7th. You've invited some experts who know all about peregrine falcons. Tell us about this at the Carlisle Reservation.
Yes, it's going to be at the Carlisle Reservation this coming Tuesday, February 7th at 7 p.m. The couple is Chad and Chris Saladin. I hope I'm pronouncing their name correctly. And they are local experts, Cleveland area experts on peregrine falcons. I'm looking forward to it in particular because peregrine falcons, just like the bald eagles, nearly disappeared. In the sense of going extinct 50 years or so ago until the banning of things like DDT. Since that time, you know, similarly to the bald eagle, they've made a great comeback. They've actually been taken off of the endangered lists, and you can now see them around this area, however. Sometimes they're interesting because around this area, they quite often live and breed within major cities, Cleveland, for example.
Well, the habitat that once was theirs has now been replaced by a lot of steel and buildings, and they've adapted those buildings to their nesting sites.
Exactly. They used to live on cliff sites. Now they've been able to adapt. I think many birds are starting to adapt. But they have found that, you know, skyscrapers serve their purposes just as well as cliffs. However, I should point out they're generally a coastal bird and a Rocky Mountain bird, but they can be seen in various places throughout the rest of the country. And actually, I guess most of the world also.
How would we know if we saw one? How would you best describe it or let people who...
Well, I think the Saladins are best to describe that, actually. I've only seen, definitely, a peregrine one time, and that's when they pointed it out to me at Sandy Ridge. They tend to be a high-flying bird, and and they're not that, even though they exist nearly everywhere in the world, from what I understand, they are somewhat thinly distributed. So I have not really seen that many myself, and so it would be hard for me to describe. I think people will have to come to our meeting on February 7th.
Jim, is Lorain County a good place to see a variety of birds?
It is a good place, particularly during migration season. During the months of April and May, you can see a very good variety as they pass through here on their way to Canada. For example, warblers. You can see them all in Lorain County. The places that we see them, though, might be, you know, they might be a little harder to pick out than some places nearby, but they all do come through here. It's also said to be, how should I describe it? Of course, that hawks often take. As hawks come north, they usually will come. They don't like to cross water. So they'll come north, see Lake Erie, and then you'll often see them going east or west. Once they see the lake on their horizon, they'll head east or west, quite often along I-90, trying to find a way around that huge body of water that they've come in sight of. So That's one reason why if you're driving along I-90, you quite often see them flying above you, particularly in those months. Of course, some also stay here. So, you know, we do get a good variety.
Jim, I noticed something on your Facebook page, the Black River Audubon Society Facebook page, answers the question about woodpeckers and about, you know, how they whack their heads against trees.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder, how is this possible? You know, if we whacked our head against trees forever, we'd have a problem. Why is it okay for woodpeckers?
Well, it's a bit technical, but their heads are constructed in such a way that there's certain evolutionary qualities they've been able to take on within their heads that enable them to do this. I am not the expert on woodpeckers to totally describe that, however, but they can do it, obviously, and they do it because of evolutionary changes down through the millennia that enable them to do it. But that's not much of an explanation from me, but I do not claim to be an expert on woodpeckers and their habits.
Well, that's good enough for me. Evolution, sure. Evolution is good enough.
We're talking this morning with Jim Jablonski with the Black River Audubon Society. How did you get involved with this organization, or where did your love for birds and this sort of thing
come
from?
Well, to tell you the truth, like many Americans, I just was not that interested until I became until I was able to retire. I retired relatively early at age 60. I still did other things, but I had some free time on my hands, and I hate to describe it this way, but when I was 60, I thought, well, what do 60-year-old people get into? And I realized, well, you know, quite often it's they become bird watchers. And so I started at that point. And that's an unfortunate thing, because really people ought to become involved in birding at a young age. The younger, the better. I tell younger people that bird watching is something like learning a language. You become much better at it if you start at a young age. And unfortunately, not enough do. So that's one thing. National Audubon and our local Audubon Society would like to change. We would like to see greater diversity in age and ethnicity and so forth within the birding community.
Well, people can get involved in your bird count, right? That's coming up on February 17th through the 20th, I see you have.
Yeah, correct. That's one easy way to start.
Explain this this process and what's it for.
It's considered citizen science. The reports are collected. Hundreds of thousands of people take part. Most send in a report each of the 4 days of what they just simply see outside their backyard window. You know, if they have feeders out, or even if they don't, you can watch for whatever length of time you want to, 15 minutes on up, count the number of birds of different species that you see, and report them online to the Great Backyard Bird Count website. And the numbers are totaled for not just the local area or the state, but for the entire nation and now for the entire world. I think the country with the second largest number of participants now, I believe, is India. And so then you can interact with the maps that they have on the website to see how the numbers are changing and so forth. And the records are kept from year to year. So you can also visualize with the maps that they have how bird movements are changing over time. And ornithologists do make good use of the backyard bird count. But it is an incredibly simple thing to do. I love it because you can sit at your back window with a cup of coffee and count birds and do something meaningful at the same time.
Yes, but I'm looking at this. It says in 2016, the Great Backyard Bird Count participants in more than 130 countries counted 5,689 species of birds on more than 162,000 checklists. So there's a lot of birds, and I guess you
can that's a little bit more than half of the total number of species in the world.
Wow. You got to be as sort of accurate as possible, but you can't fret over it whether you got the right.
Well, what I do is I usually do it for maybe 15 minutes or a half an hour a day, and I try to keep a running total in my head of the most I see at any given moment, or the most I see, and then, it's constantly changing in my head. For example, I'll see five goldfinches at one time, and then a little bit later, I'm counting seven. Well, I go with the highest total that I have of each species within that period of time. Uh-huh. And, yes, I'm certain there's, some mistakes that are made by people as they do this, but they probably balance out, and over the years, this probably the same number of... I'm getting a little tongue-tied here, but it was the same number of mistakes are made at each given year, and they kind of balance out. So the important thing is the trends that we see and where they are being seen. That is important, I think, to the ornithologists who study the numbers.
Jim, one of the favorite birds I see sometimes, not frequently, is the Baltimore Oriole. Do you have a favorite bird that you really enjoy seeing?
Well, I tell you what, it's one of the more common ones, but it is one that I spotted probably on the first day when I consider myself a birder, or starting to get into birding. I decided, I'll start by just simply putting out bird feeders. And I put out a bird feeder one late afternoon, didn't really look at it again, got up, decided, I'll look at it this morning as soon as I woke up. And I thought, oh, my God, somebody's canary got loose. then I realized that there were, that's not too likely. And I thought, oh, my God, is that what they call a goldfinch? Now, 60 years old, and I had never seen a goldfinch. They are around me continually, and I had never noticed them. That's the way many Americans are. We pay no attention at all to nature.
Right, we just sort of hear a noise or see something, but we don't look and watch them, and it's very interesting to see a lot of them. And have you got to the point where you can actually see a silhouette? A lot of times birding books will have silhouettes of birds.
Sometimes I can. I'm not really good enough to do it often. However, sometimes I can catch a silhouette. You might see it largely as a dark color, but you can tell by the shape that, oh, yeah, that's not one of those house sparrows. That's a house finch.
Right.
And then you look for another few seconds. The light maybe improves, and certainly it turns out to be a house finch. So, yes, that can come with time.
Again, you've got the program coming up on February 7th at 7 o'clock at the Carlisle Reservation Visitor Center. Do they need to just show up, or is there arrangements? How do people get
just up? Show up. It's better if you show the meeting starts at 7 p.m. I would recommend showing up at about 6:45.
Okay.
Mainly because sometimes we're surprised by the number of people who do come. We wind up pulling out more chairs and so forth. And it'd be better if we did that before the meeting was to start than during it.
Okay.
So I would recommend coming, aiming to be there about 6:45. It's free. It's open to the public. Our monthly meetings like that always are free. So please, I want to really suggest to come out and take in this interesting talk on peregrine falcons and bring younger people with you to try to get them interested in birding also. We're going to need them in the future because even though the peregrine falcon has been taken off the endangered list, that's kind of a two-edged sword, as they say. If they're taken off, that's a great success, but it also means there's going to be less protection for them in the future. And we're going to need those young people to continue to protect birds like the peregrine falcon.
Right. A lot of us get acquainted with the peregrine falcon through some of those webcams that they host and they put on those nests, which they've also done with some of the bald eagles. So that's another way that we can kind of see some of those animals in their own habitat and get an equation, what they look like.
Yeah,
up close.
I started doing that, watching those webcams. So, shortly after I started birding, there was one that was coming out of, I believe, Decorah, Iowa, that seemed to start that trend. And I remember showing it once before a class that I was teaching at the community college. It wasn't even a biology class or sociology. I had it up on a large screen, and people were standing up and taking pictures of the screen because they were so impressed at seeing the bald eagles tending to their young. Right. And, of course, the local Lorain County Metro Parks has the same thing with the nest that they have at Sandy Ridge Park.
Right.
You can find it on their on the Metro Parks website.
Of course, Sandy Ridge is a great place to go go birding, as you call it, because they even have a checklist, like in their one visitor's area, of what people have seen that day or that week, and at least that gives you inspiration of what might be out there for you to see, too.
I've tried all the parks. My favorite still is always Sandy Ridge. I think you see the greatest variety of birds. You also see, since my vision, that's one problem with starting at such an older age. My vision's not what it used to be, and I can more easily see the larger birds that they have out there, like the great blue heron and the eagles and so forth, and the varieties of ducks and other waterfowl than I can see warblers. And so, but yet you have them all at Sandy Ridge.
Absolutely. And, of course, the Black River Audubon, you can go to blackriveraudubon.org to get details as well to find out more about what they do. And, again, they have the program coming up at the Carlisle Reservation Visitor Center on February 7th at 7 o'clock, all about the peregrine falcon. Our guest this morning, Jim Jablonski with the Black River Audubon Society. Thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate the call.
Well, I enjoyed it. Anytime, Craig.
Thanks.